drivers, start your engines. It's the Andy 500 at Andy Moore Honda. Race in for $500 in Andy Moore cash and $2,500 more for your trade. Get 0% APR for 72 months on the new 2024 Prologue EX all-wheel drive. More savings, more selection, more for your trade. I love Andy. Visit AndyMooreHonda.com. Call 812-610-8972 for more details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Tuning in to Truth and Justice. I'm Zach Weaver, and you are listening to the Friday Follow-Up for Season 14, Episode 26, Undisclosed is Back. This week, Bob was joined by Rabia Chaudhry and Colin Miller for a great wide-ranging conversation, including the relaunch of Undisclosed. Today, I'm joined by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and the three of us are here to answer all of your listener questions. But before we get into those questions, do we have any non-episode-related topics to talk about?
I don't think so.
All right, perfect.
Nope. I'd love to give you guys a heads up on this week's episode, but as we, been kind of a crazy week for us. And so it's Tuesday right now. We're still trying to figure out this week's episode, but we've got a couple of ideas, so can't really give you a heads up on what's coming Sunday, but I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. Other than things still plugging along.
Sorry. I wanted to get a non episode moment in really quickly. I apologize.
Go for it. Look at this.
Well, I just wanted to shout out that I was so bogged down in other work today that I did not see this post or know about this news until shortly before we started recording. But I saw that Jennifer H. posted that Leo Schofield was released from prison today. And
oh, awesome.
And we all know who that is because you had a conversation with Gilbert. It's very exciting. And so I did want to just give a quick shout out to Leo and Gilbert and the whole Bone Valley crew and say congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And if you want to hear that whole story, how it shakes out, if you go listen to True Crime Binge, the episode with Gilbert King, we talked all about it a year and a half ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, let's get this show on the road. I know we got a bunch of questions. They're very wide ranging. So first we'll hear from you guys. Zach, do you have any thoughts, takeaways from the episode this week?
I loved hearing from them. I thought it was great. Rabia is always so fun to just like listen to, mm-hmm. like because she's so... She just tells you what she thinks. Like, there's no beating around the bush.
I've never in my life wondered what Rabia was thinking.
100%.
Yeah.
For sure.
There was multiple times in the episode where she would say something, and I was like, wow, you fucking tell him. Like, because I feel like if I were in that position, I would try to be like, oh, I don't know. You know, like, beat around the bush a little more. She just does not care, and it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful to hear.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I am such a huge Undisclosed fan, and just hearing the voices of Rabia and Colin together, of course, Susan's absent, but she's doing a great job with Proof. But just hearing those two voices together was like, it just lifted my mood. I'm so excited to hear what they're going to be working on. And yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in their perspectives on other cases as they come up. I mean, you know, the three of you are three of my favorite people to listen to kind of talk about anything. So especially in the like true crime and legal world, I'm just always going to be interested in whatever comes up.
I think there should be a Bob and Robbie and Colin show because they are two of my favorite people to talk to. And a lot of it is because of like what Zach mentioned with like, they are like the opposites attract. Like, so obviously they both are working in the same field towards the same thing, but like their personalities are so different and they just gel together. So when Rabia told me, we were talking on the phone, I don't know, I've known this for like 2 months and I had to hold it in, that they were relaunching Undisclosed, I was just so excited because that was one of, as you guys, most of you guys know, I don't listen to a lot of true crime podcasts.
Yeah.
But that was one, like Undisclosed, I never missed. I like those two together. And then like having that conversation for me, like to be able to like, for them, the way they bounce things back and forth where you get, you know, both of them have great legal minds. And just the way that they project their thoughts out are just so kind of contrasting sometimes. It's like the perfect, I cannot wait for Undisclosed. And it was so cool. I didn't really know what we were going to talk about in that episode other than, you know, I told them, I was like, hey, come on. I want to talk about Undisclosed. I want to help you guys promote it. And I just pointed that I asked them to do it. They didn't ask me to promote it. I wanted to come on and help them promote the relaunch of Undisclosed, mm-hmm. talk a little bit about Adnan. And it was just cool that we got to talk about so many other cases, you know, along the way.
I love that it was just a free flowing conversation. You guys just let it go wherever it went. Mm-hmm. That was such a joy to listen to. It really was.
I agree. Well, and Kathy, one of the things Kathy posted on the follow up was like, maybe, how about you throw Bob into the addendum, the Undisclosed addendum? And I thought, that's such a great idea. I cannot imagine Bob taking on anything else.
No, yeah. I mean, like, so this is the wave of emotion that I go through when that kind of stuff comes up is, I would love that. And then the other side of my brain goes, when the hell are you going to do that? It's not going to happen.
Yeah. So I'll do it. I also don't have time. Zach, right. It's up to you.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to do it, Zach.
No one will want to hear me on that. Promise you there.
Don't be so sure. But yeah, that's very exciting. And it sounded like we're saying all this, and even just within the conversation that they were having with you, they were like, oh, are we going to do the addendum? the addendum?
I think it was cool, like, when I was editing it, that you guys got to hear that. Because, like, they're some of the few people that when I'm talking to them doing an interview that I start, like, my interview hat comes off and I'm just talking to my friends.
Yeah.
And it was, like that bit when we were, like, talking about, you know, the stresses of production and deadlines and stuff like that. Like, when I was listening back to it, I was like, I kind of forgot the mics were on during that point, but it was kind of cool for you guys to get to hear that side of it. That, you know, what goes, because I think sometimes people listen, they're like, I don't understand. Bob works 2 hours a week. There's two episodes or an hour each. That's all. That's what you do to hear like all that, how the sausage is made type of stuff.
Sure.
I think that's what made it so enjoyable, though, was that all the guards were down. There was no, you know, it was listening to friends have a conversation, which made you feel part of the conversation as a friend. Like there was so. It felt like inside baseball, like we were in a back room talking, not being recorded.
Let me do this real quick before we get into the questions, because I know we got a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. I just caught something in the chat. And as I mentioned, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do for the episode this week. And I saw Amy was talking about doing an Ask Me Anything episode. And honestly, with it, so most of what I have going on this week is I have my daughter has softball and softball tournaments and traveling, and there's just a bunch of stuff happening. So I'm trying to like figure out my schedule. If you guys can decide for everybody that's listening to this on Friday live in the chat, let me know if you would be into me doing a YouTube live like this for this week's episode. Because what Amy said is, it could be an Ask Me Anything where people could ask about fire stuff, teaching, tattoos, Avatar, Korra, and or anything, parenting, dog, birds, all the fun stuff. And obviously cases, anything like that. So if you guys would be interested in me just doing a live where we do like an AMA type of episode, and that be the episode for Sunday. If it looks like the majority of you guys are into that, I'm definitely up for doing that. That would actually save me a lot of time this week. So I'll be watching the chat to see what you guys think about that. There's a way to make a poll in the chat. I don't know how, so we're not going to do that. And with that, we should get into the listener questions, Janet.
Great. Well, this is not a question, but it definitely tickled me because I had a similar reaction as Robbie and Colin were bringing it up, or specifically Robbie was bringing it up in the conversation. Daniel and Kathy both essentially said, bombshell, we've been hearing about this bombshell. And Kim even wondered, like, has it been so long and we've talked it up so much and our expectations are so high that at some, you know, that we will hear the bombshell and be like, oh, huh. Like, would it have meant more then?
I can tell you, as somebody who knows what the bombshell is, no, you will not be disappointed.
It's worth it.
Yeah. It's, and so, you know, like I was sworn to secrecy. I haven't even told Janet or Zach what it is.
Yeah.
I've kept it very tight to the vest.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear that it would still blow our socks off. That's not an expression. Knock our socks off.
Some people blow theirs off.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why knock their socks off is really any better. Okay. And then, you know, Jennifer just wanted to kind of weigh in and say, I really appreciated Rabia saying, you just keep pushing when trying to get a wrongful conviction overturned. It's frustrating as hell, but we keep going. I agree. I mean, I think that's, again, kind of the commiseration that we enjoy with a sort of behind the scenes talk and understanding that people who are doing this work full time, or to all the way to people who are, you know, dabbling in it, trying to put in some time or offer their whatever they can when they can, everybody still goes through this feeling of, wow, this is really hard. You're just constantly being disappointed or frustrated by, you know, either actions that are fully legal and that are kind of circling around what's wrong with our legal system, to people manipulating the law or just flat out ignoring it. You know, there's just a lot to be weighed down by. And so I think it is really nice to hear, you know, to get that encouragement from peers also, like, you know.
Yeah. And that's, and like last week was a good example of like what we fight for. Like we fight and we fight and we fight. And it's like wrongful conviction, post-conviction work is always a painstaking uphill battle. But you fight and fight and fight and take hit after hit after hit for those wins when we get them. Because when we get them, they're huge. And all, you know, everything that was happening last week with West Memphis 3 and Jason Carroll, Leo Schofield just got released from prison yesterday. All that stuff that's going on, it's like, you know, you fight and fight and fight and you stick with it and you stick with it and you stick with it. And then when we finally get those wins, it reminds, for me, it like reminds you of why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, and the nice little nugget that I think Rabia dropped in there that I felt was really nice is that she said, you know, it can take 15 years. Like it's the idea that this isn't overnight, which sucks, right? But I think too many people get wrapped up in the fact that you're like, oh, we've worked on this for 6 months, nothing's happening. Like this is a long fight, and it's great to see them continue to push, and I think that's a big deal.
And I want to point out too that you all, the audience that are listening and sticking with this stuff and that are continuing to keep the pressure on, it makes a huge difference, because I see case after case after case. I see it all the time where, as a matter of fact, our season 15 case, I was working a lot on that over the weekend, and I was talking to the convicted person that we're going to be dealing with, and you know, they were telling me, I didn't realize that this had happened, but there was a time when an Innocence Project took the case, and they had it, and they worked it for like a year, but like, you know, the new law students for the year come in, they worked the case, they did their best with it, they didn't have any more funding, and it kind of gets dropped. So like, even within the legal community, you know, they'll take, you know, the most innocence clinics don't have the kind of funding to do actual, like, real investigative work. That's why so many of them reach out to us, because we can do it for them. And, you know, what they're looking for in most of their cases is, let's find the case, let's test some DNA, let's get them exonerated. And if it's not that simple, and it's no knock at all to the innocence organizations, they just don't have the staffing, the funding, the time to keep it going. So, you know, Ed Eight's case is another example of that. You know, the innocent, you know, his case was pitched to IPTX years before we took it, and it was way too complicated of a case for them to work. So they looked at it for a little while and said, there's nothing we can do here. Mm-hmm. And then you all stepped in and did so much work that they were able to pick it back up and push it over the finish line. So don't ever underestimate the power of what you, the audiences of all these wrongful conviction crowdsourcing shows, are doing. You're the ones keeping the cases alive.
Yeah, I love that. Capri, I see your note in the YouTube chat is undisclosed on the same feed. Subscribe to that and we will get notifications when they start back up. I will say, even though I am none of the people on Undisclosed, a resounding yes to that, because the update that they were coming back came on the regular Undisclosed feed, which I've never like sort of unsubscribed to. So there it rolled in. And so, yeah, just make sure you're still subscribed, and I'm positive it will roll right in for you.
It is. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Fiona just, you know, gave a shout out to Susan, said wondering if she was going to be popping back in, but also said, I assume it's because she's busy with her Fantastic Proof podcast. Maybe she will pop up occasionally. I don't know, but I will say that great storytelling this season on Proof and the last season, also making an impact. And yeah, very, very cool. And I'm very hooked on this season that they're doing.
And Susan's doing amazing things on Proof. So I mean, I can't speak for any of them if they'll cross over, but I know, I mean, Susan is very deep into the work she's doing on Proof and already getting some amazing results.
Totally.
So I know the plan is it's just Rabia and Colin.
So well, I mean, I yeah, because Susan's like full time, like traveling all over, working on Proof and stuff. And it's, you know, it's a huge undertaking. But that's a great team over there, too. You know, it's like if the problem is that because there's now two fantastic podcasts instead of just one, I'm OK with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Kathy. Oh, Kathy was the get on that addendum. OK, so here's this from Jennifer P. Has there been any response to Adnan's call for action to the attorney general to look into the prosecutorial misconduct of Urich and Murphy? Or is this on hold for the Supreme Court decision? I haven't been able to find anything, and I'm excited. Robbie Ann Collin will be back to update us on all the loose ends, bombshells, and behind-the-scenes tidbits.
There is no news on that that I'm aware of. My guess is it's waiting on the Supreme Court decision and see where things go next. I mean, because again, we don't, as Collin was explaining, like we don't know what's going to happen next. You know, there is a world, while it seems like the most unlikeliest of conclusions, there is a world where the conviction gets reinstated and Adnan has to go back to prison until this gets worked out again. I can't. So that's where the focus is at is right now, is just on getting this done and over with. If the Supreme Court upholds the circuit court's ruling that the conviction's overturned, then that's it. It's over for Adnan, and then we can move on from there.
Gotcha. Amber says, when the Maryland Supreme Court ruling finally comes out, will Adnan and his family and his attorneys, etc., be informed before the news is made public? Will they be asked to appear before that court?
They won't be asked to appear before the court, I don't believe. I don't know. So they should be, right? So the order should be sent to the attorneys involved first before it gets made public. But a lot of times the way they do that is there's some other legal cases that I've been following where when the judges release their orders, they put them onto their public website. That's where they show up. So a lot of times like news media outlets will pick it up, you know, real quickly, sometimes before anybody else knows about it. So that's possible. I don't know the exact inner workings of how the Maryland Supreme Court would work in this instance.
Gotcha.
Look at you go, knocking stuff out, letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you've got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.
Emily says the West Memphis 3 DNA development has me thinking about the DNA testing for Adnan's case. I know that there was touch DNA on Hay's shoes that didn't match Hay, Jay, or Adnan, but was it checked against other people who knew Hay or have some involvement in the case? How likely is it that the DNA came from the killer? Like if it belonged to a family member, for example, you assume it was already there before she was killed. But if it belonged to someone who knew her but had no business touching whatever item was being tested, it could be really significant. Are there any other items that could be tested for touch DNA in her case?
I know there was some talk at one point about maybe doing some MBAC extraction of DNA on her, the shirt, I think, that was in the trunk. As far as the DNA that's found in the shoe, as far as I know, we just know that it wasn't Adnan's and it wasn't anybody whose profile they had readily available. And I believe that was part of what Mosby was saying she was going to do is, you know, now we're going to continue the investigation and, you know, run through CODIS or whatever they're going to do and try to figure out whose DNA that is. And then of course, you know, this whole fight to overturn that ruling came in and then Mosby left office. Ivan Bates is in. So, now I think for all we know, that could be happening behind the scenes right now. We don't know.
Gotcha. I'm glad you brought up MVAC because that takes us to Sharon's comment and questions. And also, I would love to circle back on kind of the MVAC of it all. And I promised myself I was going to be a person who said anything of it all, and I just did. So
yeah,
apologize to everyone. Sharon says, regarding the Jason Carroll case, I was listening to the Bear Brook update about the DNA testing. They discussed swabbing areas on the evidence that are most likely to provide DNA. Are they aware of MVAC testing? Feel like it would be an ideal option in this case.
I don't know. I don't know much about, I mean, I know a little bit about that case, and I listened to Bear Brook, some of it a long time ago. As far as do they know, I don't have that kind of personal connection to know that. But the thing is, so like MVAC is newer technology, and it has to be accepted into each state in order to be able to use. I don't know if anybody has brought it up there in that case. So it's certainly not the norm right now. So like the normal way most law enforcement agencies are going to use to extract DNA is swabbing. That's the normal, that's the norm method right now. And MVAC is a newer advanced method to do that. So in almost any case, without even knowing the details off the top of my head in that case, what they're trying to get DNA off of, I can say that MVAC, yeah, it would be better.
So can we touch on that just for a quick second? Because I know that's been kind of talked about in a lot of circles, and I don't feel like they're quite getting the facts right.
Mm-hmm.
That MVAC is a collection process.
Right.
MVAC is not a DNA testing process.
Exactly. Yeah. And on that note, just very briefly, somebody connected to one of our other cases that we're still working on right now, asked me to listen to, because someone had directed them to listen to our good friends, the prosecutors, did an episode on the West Memphis 3 ruling. And they were told to listen to that, and it kind of scared them a little bit because the way they broke it down made it seem very like it's very difficult to get DNA testing done. And so even though I swore I would never listen to another episode with them again, I went ahead and listened to it for this person. And I'm not suggesting anybody listen to them, but anybody that still does listen to them, and anybody that was thinking like of the Adnan case and how, you know, I said they spun, lied, manipulated, twisted facts in that. Pay attention to, you heard Bob Mata, Allison Mata, and Colin Miller all discuss that Supreme Court ruling. If you were to hear their breakdown of it, their reaction to it is very different, and you'll see the methodology. If you've already listened to it, you'll see the methodology that I was talking about. So, for example, what you heard, so the basically the court ruled there's plain language in the statute that allows for DNA testing, and the reason for that was, which was laid out in the order, was because in the statute, even though it's listed under habeas, there's a piece of it that says it's for, you know, habeas corpus, blah blah blah, and then it says or in cases where the client is trying to prove their actual innocence. That was the plain language they used. Shockingly, in their coverage, they never mentioned the words actual innocence one time. They never said that was anything about the plain language. They said that the four justices that ruled on this, that ruled in the favor of the West Memphis Three, they just did it because they're just activists, because they're wrong about everything that was said in there. And then they went, and getting to what you're talking about, Zach, is what made me think of it, is they then went on to say that the percentage chance of getting usable DNA off of the bindings in this case was only a 5% chance. I don't know what part of their ass they pulled that number out of. Seems like the back. I don't know.
It's so gross. It's so gross.
They're like that number. I don't know where that number came from. And then they said how they shouldn't allow the testing because new technology could come out later and the MVAC will destroy the DNA. So a couple things there, as Zach and I were discussing earlier. I mean, how long and how many times do you kick the can down the road that there's new technology, but you can't use it to test the DNA because later there might be new technology? You know, how long can we keep doing that? At some point, you got to test it. You can't keep saying we're not going to test it because we want to test it. And then the other piece of it was MVAC is not destructive at all. In fact, it is designed in a way to preserve the evidence. As Zach mentioned, MVAC DNA is an extraction method. Instead of rubbing a Q-tip over the surface of something, it uses a sterile solution to kind of wash out all of the DNA from inside of it. Vacuums it through onto this disc that's the size of maybe a half dollar. That becomes the swab. That's all it does, is it extracts the DNA. And then They cut that into usually thirds, I believe. It might be quarters, but I believe when Susanna Ryan was showing me it, they cut into thirds. They take one third of that, and that is what they test for DNA. That's where they try to develop the profile. The other two thirds of the DNA that was extracted is then preserved in case, wait for it, there's new technology later that comes along that might be able to analyze it further. So essentially, I don't want to talk about them. I don't want to, but everything they said is completely misleading. It's the exact same thing. And the only reason I bring it up is for anybody that's still like, yeah, but I think they're doing their best. All I'll say is you heard three other lawyers break down that ruling in the act based on what it actually said. And then knowing that, and then hearing that response was inferior. I was pretty pissed that I listened to it at all. But anyway.
Well, I want to say too, on the Forgotten West Memphis 3 documentary, that if you go watch it, she shows it to you. She shows you how it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to be able to see, not just hear us talk about it, but to be able to see it done.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't know that we've entirely answered. Did we fully answer Emily's question? I don't know.
I don't remember Emily's question. I think
it was just about whether there was other opportunity. Oh, she was touched.
Yeah, and the answer to that, as far as in that case, if MVAC could be used again, I'm certain it could always be used. It could always be used in place of a swab. Whether or not they're looking into doing that, I don't know.
Okay, and so just. I'm not asking you to climb into someone else's head, although I guess maybe I am, or even the chat, if you want to answer this for me. Why, if you feel, and this goes to what we've already been talking about with Rabia saying, you know, the only reason, Zach, what was the quote from Rabia? That's like, there's no reasonable explanation why.
There is no reasonable explanation other than you don't want to know the truth.
So if you're a person who feels like justice was done, and the guilty people have been identified, why are you arguing that there might be better technology? Don't test the DNA. Like, why is that person ever going to argue? Hold on, though. Hey, people who say you're innocent and are asking for this DNA to be tested, even though I believe you're guilty, don't you want to wait? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it doesn't make sense. It's very obvious, like on its face. Probably the person that's asking to have the DNA testing done is pretty damn sure their DNA is not going to be there.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe people do weird things. But yeah, the argument you get is, oh, this is going to open the floodgates and it's going to bog down and everybody's going to be just testing everything and everything. You know, they try to make it as though it's a burden on the court system. And the translation of that is, people don't matter. People that are, we can't be wasting these resources just because somebody got locked up for their whole life for something they didn't do, because other people might try to do it too. So fuck them.
Right. Right. Yeah. The wasted resource thing. Yeah. And then the other thing I was going to say about that, and I'm sure we're for the most part very much preaching to the choir, but you know, the argument that, oh, well, you know, Bob and Allison and Colin are super biased in favor of the defense, so they're going to interpret information differently than this other group of people who are totally unbiased and don't have a dog in the fight and are just speaking truth to power, who, you know, are just reading it like it is. If you have listened to more than one episode of anything that Bob and Allison or Robbie and Colin have done, they are very comfortable and said so in your episode about that ruling, about what they're worried about. Yep. They're not saying, hey, it's blue skies, we're fine, we're great because we're the defense team and we think everything's going to be wonderful. They are very quick to say, they're very quick to be pessimistic because of what they've gone through. And they're very quick to say, here's where I think the problems are. And this doesn't look good for us because XYZ. So that's, to me, that's not biased in terms of, like, if you think that someone's, you know, looking through something through rose-colored glasses because they're biased, then that's also not being intellectually honest, because they are very ready to say, hey, this doesn't look great for us. I'm not saying I think that's the right answer, but this doesn't look great for us for all of these existing legal reasons. Like, that's honest. That's honest.
Well, and the thing is, like, it doesn't matter if I'm biased or not. Like, you look at the scoreboard. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the four justices on the Maryland Supreme Court who are smarter than me, and they've been working Arkansas law longer than any of the people that we just mentioned, all looked at it and determined that this was the right interpretation of the law. They do it. And then the argument back to it was, they're clearly just activists. Like, how fucking narcissistic. I'm sorry. I'm not going to get into any more. Like, because it comes back to it, when this first came out, when they went they're never going to test the evidence. This is ridiculous. The Supreme Court, Arkansas Supreme Court, isn't going to rule in their favor. And then they did. So clearly it's not because they misinterpreted the language and the, as far as those two podcasters, it must be because it's the same argument for me. Oh, I disagree with you, so you're biased, right? I disagree with you, so you're just an activist. You decided to sit on the highest court in Arkansas and make decisions based on your activism, your bias, whatever it is.
But that's those are also choices that I think are the clicks choices, are the, look, we're talking about it. We're talking about it. It worked.
Right.
Those trigger words, those things that's part of playing the social media game. It's part of playing the, I'm just going to say something disruptive so that you will talk about me game. I mean, in my opinion, that's just, you know, that's also tactics for what's more showing what's the most important thing to you is attention.
Yeah. And I'll justice. Say this. The other reason that I just wanted to bring it up is because in that they said that they are going to cover the West Memphis 3 case. They said it may be however long before they do it. And I know when they do that, there's going to be a bunch of you that are going to be like, do a reply brief on that. And I'm just telling you now, no. They're so ridiculous. It's so obnoxious. I'm done. Like I said, I listened to that episode at the request of someone who I deeply care about and asked me to, because it affects a case that we're working on. And that'll be it. So even if she asked me again to listen to another one, I'm going to have to say, no, I can't do it. It just makes me too mad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Sharon also says, I'm guessing there could be fundraising for DNA testing for West Memphis 3. If there's a new release of the Test the Fucking Evidence shirts, please give plenty of advance notice. As a single parent with a budget, I missed out last time, but would really like to get one if there's more. Aside from wanting to assist to raise money, the shirts are just awesome, and I feel like it would be a great talking point to raise awareness of the case, especially in Outback Australia. Sharon, good day.
Yeah.
Good day to you, Sharon.
I still have a handful of those left that I've got some of those and the Ask Me How I Know Adnan's Innocence t-shirts. I've got a few of those left. So at some point, I just need to put what I have in stock on the shelf. Mm-hmm. When we do the fundraising for the DNA, we'll probably just straight up put the fundraising site up to do that. And the reason for that is because, like, we did it to fund the expert witness for their for their hearing, but it just, by the time you make the shirts, pay for the packing, pay for the shipping, pay for all the stuff, the fee, the credit card fees, the fee to the seller, all that stuff, it ends up being that, you know, I mean, you get a shirt, so you're getting more value out of it, but you're spending $25 and $5 of that is end up going to, you know, it's all that's left over going to the testing. I would rather in this instance just say, just give the 25 and we'll just give that straight to the testing.
Got it.
I love Danielle's comment here regarding the West Memphis 3 reply brief. And she says, no reply brief needed because they can just go back and listen to the season.
Yeah. Also, I'm maybe a little butthurt that they named off the documentaries about the case and they didn't name mine. It's almost like they don't like me.
Oh, I mean, that's 100% on purpose.
Look at you go, knocking stuff out. Letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you've got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.
Thank you.
Vegas, I think, missed. I know we've talked about it in the past, but this conversation with Rabia was the first time that Lilius heard that this season was a case that Rabia suggested. So shout out again for that. And for anybody who missed that when we've talked about it in the past, yes, this is a case that came to you from two places, Rabia and your own team.
No, this one did not come from my team.
Oh, I thought there was one that you said you reached out and someone was like, oh, no, I just got this, or I was just looking into this already.
There was the case that we were going to cover for season 15. There was some of that going on. Where,
oh, okay. Got it.
That was Captain from True Crime Garage.
I gotcha.
Had sent me the case.
That's right.
And I started looking into it. And then I sent what I had over to the case selection team. And they're like, that's one of our final cases, our finalist cases. But that was the one that then got picked up by an innocence clinic, and the innocence lawyers were like, let's not do any media on this until we see where we're at with
That's
it.
That's right. I can read it, though.
Yeah. But that. So for those of you, anybody that hasn't been listening all along with this one, what's coming up for season 15. So when Rabia listens, and when she listened to that episode, she reached out and was like, hey, this is a case. It got sent to me a year or two ago. I've been doing research on it. This person is absolutely innocent and something needs to be done. I don't have the place or the time to do it. It would be perfect for you. So she sent it to me and I got the case, and she didn't realize when she sent it to me, it's literally in the county I live in.
Yeah, right. It's crazy to me.
It's right here. I guess this is kind of housekeeping stuff, but as a quick update on that, I've had now direct communication with the district attorney, for our county, and I thought it was going good. I sent an email. It was like on Sunday. I sat down. I was working the case, and I fired off an email to the police chief. Said, "Look, let's have a meeting. Let's sit down and talk." And he ghosted me. And then I sent an email off to the prosecutor and was like, "Let's have a meeting." Like this whole the fact that no one seems to know where these trial exhibits are. Like we don't talk about the case specifically, but I mean, I need to just kind of talk to you about what we're doing, and the fact that you know, your procedural stuff, I need to know what the hell is going on, why nobody can seem to find these trial exhibits.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually emailed me back right away on a Sunday and was like, well, I wasn't here back when this case happened, but, you know, what is it you want to talk about?
Hmm.
And then I sent him this whole thing, and I essentially said, look, part of this is, you know, I'm working a case in the county I live in. I've worked with that office before in the past in prosecutions when I worked in the fire department.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I want to give you a heads up. You know, I have, you know, we've got, there's 100,000 people around the world that are going to be listed. So your office is about to be international news, and there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to be reaching out. So, you know, I don't want you all of a sudden to get flooded with a bunch of emails and wonder what the hell's going on. We can talk about that. And I explained to them that, I was like, look, you know, I have no doubt. I don't know this particular person. It's a newer DA. I have no doubt that your goal is truth and justice, just like mine. I certainly hope that we can be, that we can work together on this to find the truth in this case. You know, I don't want to paint you as a villain or anything like that. I'm hoping that we can move forward with this. And I said, but in regarding these trial exhibits, because I passed this on through somebody else, but now I said it directly to him. So regarding these trial exhibits, I said, look, and I kind of gave him the background. I'm like, just so you know, like, I'm not just some guy in a basement doing this stuff. Like, we've done multiple cases. We've had several overturned convictions, people released on parole and actual innocence. Innocence clinics bring us cases all the time. Like, I know what I'm talking about. And I'm telling you, this case is very likely getting overturned based on what I've already found. So that's going to put you in a position where you're going to need to retry it. And I think you need to retry the person that actually did it, and it's not the person that's in prison. But even if you need to retry the person that's in prison, how are you going to do that? Like, you need to find these trial exhibits.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do that with no evidence?
Yeah.
I'm being told by everyone that the evidence doesn't exist, which means this victim is not going to get any justice. So, you know, let's see if we can figure this out. And then that was 2 days ago. Cricket since then. No response to that email. So that's where we're at right now. But I also do want to point out that that's not slowing us down. Like, we're, you know, I spent most of this weekend digging through the case file that we do have and the trial transcripts. And as I think I mentioned last week, I'm hiring one of my students that's going to start in the summer. I had a meeting with her folks this weekend, and she's ready to start digging into it. She's going to be a researcher for us on that. And we are going full steam ahead with this case, with or without. I mean, what we're missing are crime scene photos and recordings and things that, you know, I want to hear. It's critical in this case. I really want to hear the 911 call. You'll realize why later. It was played at, that's as an example, and we'll get off of this in a second, but I just want to keep you guys, I want you guys to know that we're continuing to work towards this season.
No, for sure. We're in a position where we're pretty much done with questions. So there's no,
oh, good.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, but in this case, the 911 call plays a critical role in the case. There was a piece of evidence that came about as far as what was happening in those critical few minutes. And now they're saying nobody has the 911 tape anywhere when it's played at trial, which again, that would mean that if the conviction's overturned, which I'm confident it will be, that then they have to retry the case and they don't have that anymore. We don't have crime scene photos. We can do, in this particular case, it's not critically important that we have the crime scene photos, but I like to visualize, see the scene and piece that stuff together. And I like you guys to have that. So that's the stuff that I'm fighting for right now. I have, you know, the police reports that say, you know, so like the reports on interviews. So I have the report that says I interviewed this person. They said this, and it was recorded. Well, I want the recording. As you guys know, you know, statement analysis is a big part of the work that I do. I want to do statement analysis. I want you guys to hear those interviews. Nobody seems to have those interviews anymore. So there's all these holes in the case file right now. But come hell or high water, in the first couple of weeks of June, we're going. We're doing it with what we got.
So Jennifer Hill asks if you knew about the case before Rabia handed it to you.
I did not. The case is from 2001. So not one. And when you hear about it, it'd be this particular type of crime in this particular city is not, it's not uncommon enough that it would be like, you know, front anything page that would even make the news. In fact,
I didn't know anything about, living right here. I worked in that town, very close proximity to that murder at the time of the murder, and never heard anything about it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I even was looking for like some news because I wanted some archival footage from like news reports, and I couldn't even find that. I've never saw other than like a little blurb when an appeal was upheld, you know, mm-hmm. you know, when the conviction wasn't overturned. Like I never saw anything even reporting on the actual trial.
Just to note, Crystal points out, or is asking, is this the first time we are going in with presumption of innocence openly? I mean, you've definitely been, that's a good question, Crystal, because I do feel like this is one where you have not made the attempt to say, like, I simply don't know. Like, I'm not sure about that. You know, I'm going to try to really stay open-minded, but like, it seems like this case is so egregious that just getting the information about what the case is like a giveaway almost.
So when I got the case file, I was skeptical as I always am, you know, because this is what usually happens is people send me, you know, a case and they're like, this happened. And there was a horrible misjustice or injustice. And then oftentimes then I dig into the case file. I'm like, well, that's not exactly what happened. Right. Now, this is a little different because it came from Rabia, and I trust Rabia with my life. And so when Rabia, who has had the case file and has done some research, was telling me this stuff, obviously I was looking more into that stuff. So there's a big key element to the case. So I saw that part of the case. I know what Rabia told me. So one of the first things I did was went and go track down this person, sat down and did an interview and said, tell me what happened. And that person told me what happened and was like, yep, that's just like, I mean, so oftentimes we're starting a case and like we have the presumption of innocence because I'm like starting to learn the case as the season is beginning. In this case, I've already been investigating it for a month.
Mm-hmm.
I've already been working a bunch of these angles for a month, gathering information. And so, yes, when this season starts, I can tell you right now, I'm thoroughly convinced that this person is innocent.
Yeah.
I don't know how they couldn't be. I mean, they are innocent. I mean, what they were convicted on was bullshit. And you'll hear all about it soon.
Can't wait. Yeah, not wait. That is essentially it. I mean, we had a little tagged on a question from Jason it doesn't really relate to any of this stuff. And I didn't put it at the top because I didn't know if we would have time for it. But Jason had a question about Scott Peterson, because he says he saw a post where someone asked if you were going to cover that. And he says, if he remembers correctly, you said, hell no, which gave Jason the impression that was a kind of that you were sort of implying that you felt like he was guilty by having that response. And then he, you know, just having had Rabia and Colin on the podcast, he thought maybe if Rabia thinks he's innocent, that there might be a. But I
hell no is I know very little about the case. I've read into it a little bit, and it seems like he's probably guilty. I've read the arguments for his innocence, and maybe there's some legs there. I just don't. There are so many people that have done so much work on that case, that continue to work on that case. It's being litigated. Like, it's just, so hell no means I just don't have any interest in wading into that mess. Other people are already doing it. I don't need to get into some big controversial high profile case. As you guys know, I've said, like, I don't want to work high profile cases. I want to expose cases that people haven't heard of before and shine light on those. So yeah, no, I have no strong opinion one way or the other on that case. I've never really studied it much. Like I said, you see some documentaries and stuff like that, and you.
Well, and it's a fair question in terms of if for those people who found you through the West Memphis 3, it's fair for someone to think that you might be willing to take on something else like that. But we also know that that's an aberration in the work that you've done, and there was a very specific reason that you felt called to that case. I would say, and also given your experience with it, I'm not sure you have any interest in rushing back into that sort of melee.
No, and like you said, the West Memphis 3, the thing that triggered me to do it was when I finally went through the documentaries and listened to everything, I realized nobody's focusing on the three little boys that got murdered, and things had fallen off when the three got released, and I wanted to push us to where we're at now. Let's solve this thing and figure out who did kill them and put a fucking end to it.
Right.
I don't have that. I mean, obviously I feel for the victims in the Scott Peterson case too. Lacey, and what was their unborn child's name? I know there was
Please don't do this to us on air.
Okay.
Connor? I think it's Connor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lacey and Connor Peterson. Yeah. I mean, I certainly do feel for them, but I don't know that there's anything that I can add to it. It's if Scott Peterson didn't do it, then it's like, it's one of, like, if you thought in some of our cases, it's like, man, there's a lot of unfortunate coincidences. Like, the amount of unfortunate coincidences is in that case are anyway, not my bag.
Well, we had time.
I've got
to
a great case you've never heard of,
yeah,
except for Valeria, and Valeria, you're not allowed. But I should point this out as far as the quality and skill of our listeners. Valeria figured it out. The first time I mentioned anything about it, she messaged me and said, is it this case? And I was like, oh, how the hell?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. She figured it out.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible, because you told me the name and I still couldn't find the case.
Right. Yeah. So Valeria, you're not allowed to share that with anybody. But yeah, with that being said, you said we don't have any more questions?
Nope.
Okay, awesome. Well, then let's go ahead and we'll wrap this thing up. So it looked like from the response that we saw in the chat, I think that's probably what we're going to do for Sunday. We'll do kind of an AMA episode where people can ask about cases. You can ask about whatever you want. We'll probably do it. We'll probably do it like a live stream for patrons, and then we'll put that audio out on the main feed. Looking at probably what's going to work in my schedule, probably like Thursday afternoon. We'll do something like that. So be on the lookout for Patreon. And I'll make a post on the fan page too, if anybody wants to write in any questions that they want to have for that. So we can just have that'll give me a little breathe. Cause with everything I have going on this week, I thought about just saying, I'm just going to take Sunday off, but I want to make sure you guys have something on Sunday. So if you were like, man, I really want to listen to some serious crime stuff, you can take Sunday off. For those of you that just want to hear me talk about something, there'll be something for you on Sunday. With that being said, thank you all for listening, subscribing. We appreciate every single one of you. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of createdintandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Wadyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth. Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Look at you go, knocking stuff out, letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you've got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.